Reporter Dexter Filkins has covered the biggest news stories of the past decade. After the attacks of September 11, 2001, he made his way to the World Trade Center site in Lower Manhattan. He chronicles that day in his new book called The Forever War.
Walking in, watching the flames shoot upward, the first thing I thought was that I was back in the Third World. My countrymen were going to think this was the worst thing that ever happened, the end of civilization. In the Third World, this sort of thing happened every day. Earthquakes, famines, plagues. In Orissa, on the eastern coast of India, after the cyclone, the dead were piled up so high and for so long that the dogs couldn't eat anymore. They just lay about waiting for their appetites to come back, lazily looking at one another. 15,000 dead in that one. This was mass murder, that was clear. It was an act of evil. Though I'd seen that too. There were the 40,000 dead in Kabul. I don't think I was the only person thinking this, who had the darker perspective. All those street vendors who work near the World Trade Center, from all those different countries, selling falafel and shawarma. When they heard the planes and watched the towers, they must have thought the same thing as I did, that they'd come home.
Dexter Filkins went on to cover the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq for the New York Times. The two countries, he says, are dramatically different in many ways.
If you take Iraq, it's flat, brown, kind of monochromatic, unbelievably hot. I mean, the heat there is just extraordinary. But it's also a very educated, pretty wealthy, sophisticated place. And when you go to a place like Afghanistan, when you get off the helicopter there, you look out and it feels like you've landed literally in the 9th century. The literacy levels are extremely low. You can go into villages, any village really, unbelievably undeveloped, no electricity, no running water. And that just makes for an entirely different experience. I should say it's sort of that on one hand and then the landscape, which is stunningly beautiful. And so an entirely different war for that reason, too.
You witnessed much more than that, and you tell the story through many different characters who you met up with in each of the places where you were. One of the things, though, that you say, and as you speak to, people here listening in the United States now, one of the things that you say about Iraq, you say there were always two conversations in Iraq, the one Iraqis were having with the Americans, the one they were having among themselves. The Iraqis lie to the Americans because the Americans have the power. Of course they lied, you write, but the worst lies were the ones Americans told themselves. What are the lies that you say Americans are telling themselves about both Iraq and Afghanistan?
Well, I mean, the first thing was, just to get at the first part of your question, which is the two conversations, it wasn't so much that the Iraqis were lying. I mean, that to me was sort of taken as a given, but it wasn't because they were sort of, bad people or pathological liars. I think what became apparent to me when I was in Iraq, and I was there for almost 4 years, was that, the Americans would come through a neighborhood, they'd knock on somebody's door, they'd pass money out, they'd, put in a new school or a pump station, and all the Iraqis would gather around and say, thank you, we love America. And then the Americans would go home. And at nighttime, that's when the insurgents ran the place. And they'd come knocking on people's doors who'd spoken to the Americans. And so what developed from that was this kind of very strange, almost like a parallel universe. And sometimes, occasionally, I think because I didn't have a uniform on, because I wasn't carrying a gun, I would actually glimpse that. I would get a short glimpse into that parallel universe. There's a scene in the book where I ride around with a guy named Lieutenant Christopher Rosh, a guy who grew up on a poultry farm in South Carolina. A wonderful guy. And he was doling money out for dam repairs along the Euphrates River in Anbar province, which was the cradle of the insurgency. And all along the river, he's doling money out and the Iraqis are saying, thank you, we love America. And I remember as Lieutenant Rosh walked up to his Humvee, I turned to these group of Iraqi engineers who had just taken several thousand dollars from the Americans to fix their dam. And I said, well, what do you think of that guy up there? And they said, well, we hate the Americans. We're going to do everything we can to drive them out of the country. The Americans didn't get to see that. I got to see it, and that's what I meant about the two conversations.
When you say, though, the worst lies were the ones Americans told themselves, are you talking about U.S. military or Americans back at home?
I think by and large, in all seriousness, the U.S. military is very, very straight, and they see things pretty clearly. I mean, they don't have an interest in lying to themselves. They're down on the ground. Their guys are getting killed, and they're trying to sort of figure out something that works. Where I usually found a dichotomy, and where it was very, very frustrating sometimes, was there was often a division between the military on the ground and the civilians who were more politically minded, say. And particularly in the early years, kind of 2003, 2004, there was just a gigantic disconnect between what was being said and the reality outside. And the two, you know, there's the green zone, which is sort of not a terribly large place. And then what, laughingly, really, which they always refer to as the red zone, which is the which is actually Iraq. And, you know, those two realities, the reality in the green zone, which kind of is like Disney World, and the reality in the red zone, which is the rest of Iraq, they never matched up.
How closely do they match up now, and how closely do the words from the press conferences match up with what you've seen? Because you just got back from Iraq, correct?
Yes, I did. I just got back. I think much more closely now. In fact, I mean, I should even back up. I mean, if you go back to 2004, by then, by 2004, things were really serious. I mean, we had a gigantic insurgency that was, you know, spreading and growing and was incredibly violent. And it changed overnight. It went from being basically a political operation, a domestic political operation, to being a very professional military diplomatic operation. And so there was a kind of level of seriousness and sophistication and a public acknowledgement of the problems. And I think now, you know, I was just there and conditions have changed pretty dramatically in Iraq. I mean, they may not be permanent, but for the moment, they're much, much better. I mean, better than anything I've seen since 2003. Again, it's very, very fragile. It's very tentative. It's not self-sustaining. I mean, if you just take the New York Times Bureau, it's just a house in a neighborhood. You know, we don't live in the green zone. We just live in a neighborhood in Baghdad. 45 or 50 armed guards around the clock, 20-foot high blast walls, razor wire around the top, belt-fed machine guns on the roof, armored cars, our own. We generate our own electricity. I mean, I could go on and on. I mean, that's every time you step out of that bureau.
How did you ever go jogging then, Dexter?
Well, it probably wasn't the smartest thing I ever did. And it was just very strange from the beginning. It was a very strange experience because I would go out all day and I was reporting and talking to people and watching this civilization unravel watching the violence and the hostility, which were real in every way. And it was extremely dangerous. And then I'd go out at night at dusk. I put my running shoes on and I'd run into the neighborhood and I got an entirely different reaction. And I was Rocky Balboa, the scene, you know, and when he's running through the streets in Philadelphia, I mean, I'd sort of step into the streets and the children would come running and the neighbors would come running and the stray dogs would come running. And, you know, it was like a party, you know. I was always wearing shorts for one thing, which is kind of a no-no in Iraq and through much of the Middle East. And
what, why did you wear them? Just because it was so darn hot?
Oh, my God, yeah. If I was going to run, I had to wear shorts. And I remember, you know, I'd put my shorts on and say, you know, the Iraqis are just going to have to put up with my legs today.
New York Times correspondent Dexter Filkins is the author of the book The Forever War. Nice to speak with you, Dexter.
Thank you very much.
It's PRI.